9.5 FM, WBAI New York, and on the internet at WBAI.org. The program you just heard, Labrish with Haptah Selassie, will be back next week at 2 a.m. following the work of the Midnight Ravers. It is 5 a.m. right here in New York City, and it is time for Back of the Book. Stay tuned.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. All okay, okay. We went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
I'm thinking that it's about 5 a.m. on a cold Saturday morning, and you're listening to all, well, Gays for Trump has left the house radio, WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
And we're going to talk about various things here on the program. You can find out a little bit more about all of that by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can go up there, take a look at things. When you get there, you'll see a blue navigation frame on the left-hand side of your screen. At the top of that, it will say latest Back of the Book program links. Click on that and you will get to the webpage for this morning's radio program. The WBAI website and archives seem to be working all right as we record this program. This is our 157th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we won't be referencing them on this program. A recorded program cannot be as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. The top story this week in several different galaxy clusters is we have surged all the way back up to 122 followers on Twitter or X or whatever it's getting called this week. And Twitter or X or whatever is getting slammed because its owner, Leon Scum, has endorsed an anti-Semitic conspiracy hoax that's very popular among white supremacists. And some advertisers pulled their ads from the platform. Now that Leon Scum, or Elon Musk, as he's called by some people, has made an apology for his endorsement of that piece of hate, some of the advertisers that pulled out, that pulled their ads out from Twitter or X are doing so permanently. They ain't coming back now. So Leon Scum's apology included a shot at the Anti-Defamation League claiming that it promotes racism against white people, which was the original conspiracy hate speech that Leon Scum was endorsing in the first place. So, oh, yeah, I'm sorry I said that. But I'm going to say it again because, you know, the Anti-Defamation League really is doing that. And, oh, boy.
Boy, is he out of his ex in mind?
I guess he, yeah, he doesn't quite know how to read the room, does he? Anyway, it's probably a good idea that those advertisers have quit his platform permanently. I wonder how much that $44 billion property is worth now. The next regular WBAI local station board meeting will be held on Wednesday, December 13th at 7 p.m. That meeting will be held on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. This will be the first meeting of the 13th WBAI local station board. It might be a wild time, given some of the things that people are saying on the local station board's mailing list. So, apparently, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is not putting information out on their CDC website anymore regarding the death toll from the COVID-19 pandemic. They've had the same numbers up there for the past month. So, I guess that millions of people dying around the world and a current weekly total of about 1,000 deaths or more from COVID-19 every week isn't considered to be of much interest these days. The pandemic is clearly not over. Pickles of the North and I are still keeping our masks on. We're getting or have gotten our new shots. We don't want to get this disease. A program note, we are once again recording this program in our bedroom instead of in our living room in that fabulous studio that we have set up in the living room, which consists of a couple of microphones and a typing table. Yeah, we got a new toner cartridge for our printer this week, but we're still experiencing difficulty with the printer. We're hoping that next week's program will not be affected by this. Well, we celebrate birthdays here on Back of the Book. We celebrate the birthdays of people we know. Is there anybody here whom we know? Anybody in our fabulous bedroom studio who might be having a birthday on the very day that this radio program will air? Anybody? Oh, Pickles of the North! Pickles of the North is having a birthday. Oh, boy, oh, boy. How old are you now? Anyway, merry birthday, my dear.
Well, thank you very much.
And we have a little tradition that we do for people's birthdays, and we're going to do it for Pickles right now. we record this on Friday, of course, for airing on Saturday morning. And the big news for today in America is George Santos was expelled from the House of Representatives earlier today, Friday, by a vote of 311 to 114. That's a 73% vote, which is well over the two-thirds vote needed to boot him out. So he is gone. And when you throw somebody out of Congress, it's effective immediately. And they got rid of him. And, oh boy, the Republican vote was split. You know, not quite perfectly down the middle, but it was pretty close. However, almost all of the Democrats voted to oust him. And he becomes the first Congress critter to be expelled without having gone to trial and been convicted of something since the Civil War, when they said, hey, look, these other Congress critters are in places that are shooting at Fort Sumter. Maybe they shouldn't be in Congress anymore. It sounds like they've violated their oath of office to the United States of America and are now going to a foreign country. At least they thought it was a foreign country, the Confederate States of America. And he follows in their wake. Oh, what an idiot. In any event, the MAGA Republicans, including Speaker Mike Johnson, what a great guy, they really wanted to keep him in there. However, he's gone now, and so the Republicans at this time only hold a 221 to 213 majority in the House. So it's closer than ever. They can't really afford to lose a whole bunch of people voting for anything, or they would lose it. Oh, boy. Yeah, ever a classy guy, Santos's parting words from Congress were, quote, "To hell with this place," unquote. So there goes the highest profile gay Trump supporter. His next stop will probably be prison or going on the lam to another country to avoid prison. But yeah, George Santos is no longer representing anybody.
Do you think he will go on the lam?
I would not be surprised.
I wouldn't be either, but what, I mean,
where will he go? He can't go back to Brazil. No. They want to put him in jail there, too. So I don't know where he would go, but he, you know, he's an idiot. He might go someplace where they'll just say, get the hell out of here, you bum. So there's that. Yeah, the most famous gay politician at this time is this lying sack of excrement. Godlessness. Not that we don't have tons of lying sacks of excrement in Congress over the years that are straight, but geez, you know, we don't have that many openly gay politicians, and this one has to be a crummy one. One interesting artifact of doing this radio program, recording it in the bedroom in front of a computer instead of going into the living room with everything printed out on paper, is trying to say, uh-oh, does the computer want to reboot itself right now? Which just happened. Oh, gosh. Yeah, Microsoft. Yeah, evil empire. And speaking of an even badder guy who used to run around in Washington, D.C., who didn't just lie about things and steal money, Henry Kissinger died this week. He was 100 years old. You know, the old thing of, oh, yeah, you know, if you're a bad person, you know, you go away. And, well, he got his rewards. He never, you know, I don't believe he really is in hell sitting between Stalin and Hitler right now. But I don't believe there is a hell. If there were, that's where he'd be. But, yeah, so Henry Kissinger died at the age of 100, having been rich and famous and gotten what he wanted and getting laid like crazy. God, can you imagine that? Well, as I've always said, women have lousy taste in men. And so he, that's why I'm married.
Please.
Well, you know, you could have done better. But anyway, so, Kissinger died, and I'm not going to go over a litany of all the awful stuff he did. He did manage to avoid being arrested for war crimes in any of the countries where they would have arrested him. So he got away with that. He got away with a lot. And I will note that one time I passed him in the street. Gay Activist Alliance was having a demonstration, and I believe it was in the summertime. I don't know when. It would have been in the 70s. Exactly when, I don't know. And there was also, we had a walk down through from a subway station. We had a walk down a major avenue in Manhattan to get to where we were going to do whatever we were doing. It might have been a zap action. It might have been something else, whatever. And so we had to go down, and we ended up walking through a large crowd because there was some big deal, possibly international event going on in this one place on that avenue. And as we were passing through it, it's really quite crowded. It's almost like walking on a crowded subway platform during rush hour. And we're walking through there, a number of Gay Activist Alliance people. And we're walking through there, and all of a sudden, there looms up Henry Kissinger. And he has Secret Service heat in front of him and Secret Service heat in back of him, but they've strung themselves out in line, and he passes so close, I think our elbows bumped. And yeah, the Secret Service is doing a great job there. And so he had three or four guys in the Secret Service. And so we brushed past him, and I noted him, and he had this little device on his it's a marker. It was a plastic thing. I don't know, it looked almost like something you'd make with a Lego. And it's something they do to make people identifiable so the Secret Service knows, okay, this is somebody we got to, you know, protect here. And you'll see this sometimes. Members of Congress will wear a funny-looking little thing in the lapel, and he was wearing one too. It was rather garish and anti-fashionable, I thought. And so, yeah, it was my brush with Henry Kissinger, and we looked right at each other. I think he was a little bit taken aback that I was walking right up to him, and, you know, he was probably very glad I passed by and neither said anything nor blew his brains out with a revolver I might have pulled out of my pants or something. But anyway, he's dead now, and I didn't have to go to prison for shooting him. So there is that. Oh, boy, what a bad guy.
Well, you know, for him, this saying is true. Only the good die young.
Yeah, there is that. At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and I'm R. Paul Martin. So speaking of stuff that happened in the 70s, now and again we talk about things that happened about 50 years ago. 50 years ago, actually sort of the end of November more than the beginning of December. Jeez, it's December. We're in a new month again. 2023 is about to end. When you get old, these things whip past you very quickly. And I am old. Well, 50 years ago, I was lamenting having gone 0-5 in the Empire City Chess Tournament. So I was not in a good mood about 50 years ago at the end of November. Also, at the very end of November, Comet Kohoutek broke into the headlines and was predicted to be a spectacular naked eye comet. Yes, its nucleus was big, and it was moving very fast. It was being called the, quote, comet of the century, unquote, 50 years ago. And Comet Kohoutek was supposed to have been at its brightest in January 1974. Well, it was a total dud, and you could hardly see Comet Kohoutek among the stars as it went, you know, through the sky with your naked eye. With a telescope, of course, you could see it. But with the naked eye, it was, you know, it could disappear pretty easily among the stars. At the time, it was thought to have had a period of about 50,000 years. That's the period is how long it takes to go in an orbit. And, of course, it orbits around the sun, it whips around the sun and goes back out into the outer solar system again. And so they said, okay, and Comet Kohoutek will be back in 50,000 years. Well, I wonder if it'll look any better then. I won't be able to tell. Neither will you! However, these days, Comet Kohoutek is thought to have a period of about 75,000 years. Yeah, it's not a case of out of sight, out of mind. It still exists, and it's whipping around out there in its orbit. They think it's got a period of 75,000 years now. They had more time to compute the orbit in the past, you know, half century. And the comet had a period of between 3 and 4 million years before it got perturbed into its smaller orbit. It was going to have been my first real comet sighting. I had never seen a naked eye comet before. I'd never seen a comet, period, that I knew about. I didn't have a telescope at that time. And I could see pictures of comets, but I never saw one. And so I was looking forward to it, and I was like, oh, boy, I blew it in the chess tournament. But now there's this comet that's coming in, and in another couple of months, I'll be able to look at it and say, wow, it's a comet. Look at that thing. Oh, well, it didn't quite work out.
So which comet was your first naked eye sighting?
It was either Hyakutake or the other one, which I can't remember.
Hale-Bopp.
One of those two, I can't remember which one came first. But they came fairly near each other. And, oh, I was thrilled to see that. In fact, you and I were I showed you it out the window with field glasses when it was just a distant blur, a distant circular blur in the sky. And so that's 25, 26 years ago, I guess. And the other one was, they were both quite near each other in time.
Oh, and Hale-Bopp, you could just stand on the street corner.
Yes.
And look up and see it.
Yeah. I mean, we did.
Yeah, it was great.
And actually, both of them were quite visible. And, oh, well. We haven't had any really since then that have been like that, at least not in the northern hemisphere.
I think there is so much light pollution at this point. It would be extremely difficult to have a naked eye experience.
Well, and there's that too. But we still haven't had much of a naked eye comet to see anywhere. And yeah, the threshold for the comet to be visible in the city is much higher than it used to be. This is unfortunate, you know. However, that doesn't mean we can't have one. One could show up at any time now. Just hope it doesn't hit us. Always the optimist. I want to say I'm very glad that the New York Times got a particular thing right. You can hear we have the New York Times. Here it is. We're wrinkling it up right next to the microphone. Yeah, the November 28th, 2023, New York Times in the Science Times section, which is the only reason why we buy that newspaper, and we buy it once a week, and that's it. The Science Times talks about the new movie, Napoleon, which we're not going to see that thing. We haven't been to, well, I haven't been to a movie theater to see a movie in a very, very long time. I'm thinking maybe a couple of decades, because I'm kind of, I got tired of people lighting up and smoking during the movie. And sometimes it's tobacco, sometimes it's marijuana, and the marijuana stinks awfully these days. Talking loudly, and people doing stuff on their phones in the middle of the movie, and people, you know, whooping it up or something, and, you know, as if there's nobody else there. And so, yeah, I haven't seen a movie in a while, because I'd probably be one of those old people who would go off on somebody, and either they'd kill me or I'd kill them. I don't know what would happen. But anyway, I haven't been to movies. But there's a movie called Napoleon coming out, and Ridley Scott is the director of the movie. And the New York Times kind of says, Jesus Christ, Ridley Scott. Because the New York Times got a certain fact right. The fact is that, no, Napoleon did not shoot the nose off the Sphinx. And they accompany the article with a reproduction, a black and white, tiny reproduction of a painting, Bonaparte before the Sphinx. And, you know, he did go there. Of course, Napoleon was waging war with the rest of Europe and a lot of the rest of the world, and he was basically, he was trying to take over the world. He had, in good part, taken over a serious chunk of Europe, and the main people who were really, really opposing him were the Brits, and that was the first time somebody was seriously looking at a way to get across the English Channel to invade Great Britain, because Napoleon had a much bigger army, and if he could have gotten that huge army across the English Channel, yeah, he would have probably taken London without any doubt, and then he would have raised hell throughout the rest of the country. This is, you know, something that presaged events a century and a half, almost a century and a half later, when Hitler had Operation Sea Lion getting ready, and they were blitzing the British. And the way the blitz in World War II started out was it was directed against mostly the aircraft of Great Britain. The Luftwaffe was bombing the hell out of the aircraft. The aircraft that existed, the airfields, the factories where they made the aircraft, the factories where they made parts for the aircraft, and all of this because you needed to have air superiority to get across the channel. And the British had a navy, serious navy, but in those narrow confines, probably going from Calais over to Dover, in those confines of not a lot of sea space, as it's called, you know, air power means a lot. So what happened was they were trying to just diminish the British air power so that Germany could have air superiority, and they would be, then be able to fight off any ships that would fight their landing craft and ships going across the English Channel. And, of course, they would also bomb the hell out of all of the facilities on shore that would fight anybody trying to land. And so that's what happened in the 1940s. But in the 1790s and 1800s, you had Napoleon facing the same challenge, and there was really nothing he could do. The technology just wasn't really there. The British were able to put a whole lot of boats in the water between England and France, and there was no hope. Although I once read a short story by Thomas Hardy, not one of my favorite authors, mostly because he faked a biography, which he claimed posthumously was written by his wife. Oh, it was so praising of him, and what an ego. But it was a fraud, because he wrote the biography, and it was really a I never liked him for that. Anyway, he wrote a short story, which involves, and you know, it's not a great short story. Basically, the thing is, a guy is walking around on the beach, and he comes around some rocks, and he sees some guys, and one of them's Napoleon, and he's on an English beach, and they're looking at it, and they're saying how they're talking to each other. He and some generals are talking to each other in French about how they can get, you know, tens of thousands of troops onto that very beach, and then they row away. They get in their boat and they row away. Anyway, so Napoleon was, of course, taking over everything he could, and he wanted to fight the British in various places, and so he went to Egypt because the British were there. And so there was a big fight. And eventually Napoleon got shoved out. There was the Battle of the Nile, which was a sea fight with ships, old wooden ships blasting away at each other. And so he got thrown out. But the thing is, he did not shoot the nose off the Sphinx. And in this Ridley Scott movie, he has him doing it. He has him firing cannon at the pyramids and at the Sphinx. And, oh, man. And Ridley Scott told the Times of London, I don't know if he did that. Everybody else knows he didn't. But it was a fast way of saying he took Egypt, unquote. What a crummy way to do things. And, of course, the movies, people don't know history. People don't study history. People aren't even passingly familiar with history. And so a lot of people get their historical information and a lot of other information. There is so much misinformation out there because people have watched science fiction movies, and now they think it's a science fact. So they think that there's sound in space. Or they think that you can, Gravity, that was a movie. We saw that thing. We didn't go to a movie theater for it. We rented a video. And Gravity, where people are just slinging back and forth in outer space, and then they fall down from outer space to the ground. Very silly stuff. And there are people who will believe that. And in this case, people are going to believe that old myth, because it is an old thing up there. Probably, my guess, the British put it out as propaganda a couple of hundred years ago. But, this is another case of doing a disservice to all of humanity by putting in misinformation. And, I want to tell the story. I wanted to establish that he had taken Egypt. So you have to show him shooting the nose off the Sphinx and shooting the pyramids. Really, you can't just show, oh, there he is walking by them. His troops are marching past the Sphinx. Can't do that, huh? And, of course, this is BAI, where we've got various people who over the years have contended that they are ancient Egyptians. And, they castigated people on the air at times for the mythical thing Napoleon is said to have done. And the thing is, we don't know if anybody ever attacked the nose of the Sphinx, because the Sphinx is a single rock, or it started out as a single rock. And it goes pretty deeply into the desert. And it actually touches the aquifer that's deep under the desert. So there's water there. And, of course, since the Sphinx is a rock, a single big rock, the water can seep into it, and it keeps going up through capillary action. And what happens is a little bit of salt in that water, and the salt water corrodes the rock. So typically when you have like a very prominent high relief piece of rock like that, and it's got salt water starting to come into it over the course of thousands of years, over the course of millions of years, the rock's been there a long time, the finer parts of the sculpture are most prone to getting destroyed. I won't get into why. Most prone to getting destroyed. So the nose was something that stuck out, and so it was more prominently going to be destroyed. So at some point, I don't think it's known whether it just slowly corroded from the tip in or whether a whole big chunk of the nose fell off all at once, but it was certainly not something that Napoleon Bonaparte did. We know this because there are drawings of the Sphinx from a couple of hundred years before Napoleon was born, and it doesn't have a nose then either. So there you go. But I strive to not do that. I strive to not put out bad information, and I get bothered when people say, oh, I have a cavalier attitude towards telling the truth about things, because it does get some people all upset and bothered, and they say things about it and get into their diatribes, and I hope we don't hear any of that on BAI after people see this particular movie. And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. Oh, so I've been mentioning this time of year and the depressingly early sunsets, and they're hitting their nadir now. The sun set today at 4:29 p.m. Eastern Time in Brooklyn, and it'll do that on Saturday, too, the day you're listening to this live over the air. Well, it's not live over the air since it's pre-recorded, is it? Duh. So, yes. However, for December 7th, 8th, and 9th, the sun will set at 4:28 p.m. That's the earliest sunset of the year. And it usually varies by a bit. How many days it sets at 4:28. This year it's only 3 days, and that's unusual. It's frequently a week or so. But you can't tell the difference. You can't really, tell the difference between 4:28 and 4:29, since there are seconds involved in there. And so we have the sun setting at these horribly earlier times. And yes, next week, when we're doing a radio program then, it will be 4:28 for a sunset. And then after next week's program, the sunsets will start getting later. It'll start heading back toward 8:31 at night, which is what it will hit at the end of June, beginning of July, which is much better than what we have now. So, it's so depressing to me having the sun set like that, and by 5 o'clock, it's just completely dark. However, we do have December twilights, and, after the sun sets, look around outside. Sometimes December twilights are just beautiful. I don't know why it is, but I find December twilights are just sometimes strikingly beautiful, unless you got clouds all over the place and you don't see a damn thing. And the winter solstice will occur on December 21st at 10:27 p.m. Eastern Time. And I have a chart showing the seasons and sub-seasons up on my website at glib.com. That's glib.com. Well, a discovery has been made that has some people being very surprised, and surprised in a very good way. HD110067 is a star system that's about 100 light years away from us. It has six planets orbiting it, and it's a sun-like star, and all of these planets are between the size of Earth and Neptune, and they're in what's called a resonant chain, which means that they are all very related to each other in a certain mathematical way. And the innermost four planets are in a 3-2 resonance. That means that one planet will go around their star and do three orbits at a time. Another planet will do two orbits. And they're all stacked like that. And then the two outermost planets are in a 4-3 resonance. We have this sort of thing in the solar system, too, with how Uranus and Neptune are in lockstep with Jupiter and Saturn. Jupiter and Saturn dominate the outer solar system, and to a slight degree the inner, but mostly the outer solar system. And so we have these. This always has to happen because things just aren't chaotic like crazy. Gravity is there. It's going to assert itself. It's not as if it just doesn't count. And so things are pulling at each other. And as one planet comes towards another, the inner planet comes towards the outer planet, outer planet speeds up the orbital speed of the inner planet, and conversely, the inner planet, with its gravity, slows down the orbiting speed of the outer planet. And this, no way around that. Gravity happens. And so they're in these resonances. And for every six orbits the innermost planet makes, the outermost planet makes one full revolution. And so that the six planets are interacting with each other like that. And scientists are saying that this indicates that the evolution of the HD110067 system has been quiet and gentle. A lot of star systems fling planets around violently. And this may have happened in the early solar system, too. We may have had Jupiter journeying in fairly close to the sun. There may have even been planets that used to be in the solar system that got flung out of the solar system. There are things called rogue planets where you just have a planet that's out there. And with no star, it's just floating through space, and it's a full planet. And what happens with them mostly is that they were in some kind of a star system, but the various planets interacted with each other, and sometimes another star will interact with the star system, and one or more of those planets gets flung completely out of the star system, and that's it. It achieves the escape velocity of that system, and now it's in interstellar space drifting around. And there are a whole lot of those things that would pose a danger. You know, you talk about a comet or an asteroid that might hit the Earth. Well, what if sometime we're looking out there and we see an entire planet that's on a collision course? At that point, it's time for your inconstant moon protocols. And if you ever wanted to do something, time to go do it. If you have a restricted diet, throw that restricted diet away and have all the malted milks, if you can still get a malted milk anymore, and donuts that you can cram into your face because you've had it, along with the rest of us. But anyway, they fling those planets around, but the fact that this system is so precise in there means it probably didn't have that violent interaction between the planets. As we think happened in the solar system. And this also looks like it's validating Bode's Law. Bode's Law is a controversial thing. It's not really a law. It was something that was thought up in many, many years ago in the 18th century when astronomer Johann Elert Bode, who was born in 1747 and died in 1826, came up with this idea that, hey, look, if you look at the spacings of the planets, there's a special relationship here, and we can tell where planets should be, because they were still, in those days, still looking for planets. They thought there might be more planets, and they were right. And one of the things is Bode's Law predicted there would be a planet between Mars and Jupiter. Of course, nobody found one. And then in 1801, they found the asteroid Ceres, the largest of the asteroids. And people said, see, there it is. It really, but then they found out, yeah, this thing's too small to be a planet. But then they found out there were a whole bunch of asteroids out there. So people say, fudge factor. Maybe we'll just say it's kind of Bode's Law worked, but it broke. And then it goes on okay, and then for the outer planets, it's, you know, between Uranus and Neptune, one is not that far away from a prediction, the other is way the hell off. So he had this prediction, and it was, people said, yes, this is the way it really works, because they didn't have any other models. They only had the solar system to work from. And so some people got heavily invested in Bode's Law, and it's been controversial ever since. But this discovery of HD 110067 shows that it can happen, although when things are moving around, when planets move around like billiard balls, the original symmetry gets broken.
At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. He is R. Paul Martin, and I am Radio's Pickles of the North.
Ah, yes, the hobo's on the train. What train is that? It's the WBAI pitching train. Yes, the hobos are on the pitching train, and we're asking you to help us out. Yes, please help out the pitching hobos by calling 1-212-209-2950. Yes, and that's the pledge number. This is WBAI, listener-sponsored, non-commercial radio. And we don't run the commercials. You don't see the usual stuff showing up on the air here. What we do is we have you as the sponsor. Yes, listeners fund this radio station. Without the listener help, we go away. We need to have some help right now because, oh boy, I looked at the FY24 budget this past week for WBAI, and it's a deficit budget. And that is a problem in many different ways, on top of which the usual deficit budget problem, which is you can't pay your goddamn bills. And, oh, we need to raise money. The way we raise money is we ask you to fund us. We ask you to call 1-212-209-2950. And when they pick up at the call center, tell them you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. A BAI buddy is the name we have for a sustaining membership at WBAI, which means that you would donate once a month, the same amount of money once a month, and it would just fit into your regular routine. And so when you call 1-212-209-2950 and you say, I want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book, well, they will ask you for your credit card or debit card number, and then you will tell them how much you would like to donate to WBAI on a monthly basis. It could be $10 a month, $15 a month, $20 a month, more if you can afford it. And you tell them that's how much you would like to donate on a monthly basis. You also tell them what day of the month you want your credit card or debit card to be charged. And that way the money will come out of your account at a convenient time. So 1-212-209-2950. We do what's referred to as an overnight program here, even though, you know, by the end of the program, it's 6 o'clock in the morning, and it's considered ordinary morning at that point, just early morning. We do a program that goes between midnight and 6 a.m. And these overnight programs are a bit different from other programs on BAI and also from programs elsewhere on the radio dial. So they're unique. They're different kinds of programs. And some people think this is a good way to raise money, not to have us pitch, but to get rid of us. We don't have as many people awake between midnight and 6 a.m., so these overnight programs don't have the bulk of the listenership of BAI. The daytime and evening and early nighttime programs, they have the listeners. And that's where most of the listeners are. But we have this what's referred to by some as the rainforest of BAI between midnight and 6 a.m. And so what happens is we don't have that many listeners, but we do unique radio programming. There are proposals to rent out the time between midnight and 6 a.m. 7 days a week to something else. Maybe to just take a feed from another radio station. Maybe to have something that's not a radio station start broadcasting there. Maybe to have various different entities essentially having shows which they will pay for and it'll be broadcast. And because there are all sorts of places that would like to have radio airtime, and some of them will settle for the overnights. So we are kind of in danger here. If we cannot raise money, BAI, one, is going to fold up. And two, in order to make money, they may scrap the overnight radio programs, and a lot of unique stuff will disappear probably permanently, and that'll be it. So please help keep WBAI on the air. Help keep Back of the Book and the other overnight programs on WBAI by calling 1-212-209-2950. Your call also tells management that there are listeners here at these hours. We all know that fewer people are awake between midnight and 6, so fewer people are listening to the radio in those hours. So we need to tell management that there are people listening and those people care about the programming. The way you do that is you call 1-212-209-2950 and you say you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. Please call that number now and save overnight programming in WBAI. Last time, 1-212-209-2950. Thank you if you call. And you can write to me. You can write to me. I'm rpm@glib.com. That's rpm@glib.com. And let me know you have become a BAI buddy or made simply a one-time donation. If you want to make a one-time donation, you still call 1-212-209-2950. And thank you. That's been it for Back of the Book. Coming up next is
Everything Old is New Again, again with David Kenny.
And it's getting dark out so early, but, you know, we have all of these lights going up, and you don't have to believe in any of the superstitious nonsense. You can just say, hey, the bright lights are more cheerful than all this darkness, and try to get through that. And above all, remember what that Laughing at Congress Dormouse said.
33 cents a day. Not much, is it? Loose change. A third of a cup of coffee. It's nothing. But did you know that 33 cents a day can help WBAI stay on the air? That's all it takes. As little as 33 cents a day, $10 a month, you can be a BAI buddy. A BAI buddy is someone who signs up to make a recurring monthly donation to WBAI using either a credit card, debit card, or by electronic fund transfer from your bank account. It's safe, secure, and easy, and it helps keep our unique, alternative, and diverse programming on the air. You'll get a WBAI membership card and other goodies. Sign up online. Go to WBAI.org and click on donate. All the details are right there. The WBAI buddy. Be one today.
I'm David Rothenberg. I joined up with WBAI not long after Marconi discovered the wireless. If you tune in on any Saturday, that's the name of my program, you'll hear some good music, commentary covering politics, theater, movies, books, and a word or two about the criminal justice system. Actually, it's whatever's on my mind. And there's usually a guest or two to liven things up. Good start for the weekend, so I've been told. Saturday mornings from 8 to 10 a.m. Oh, and I often have tickets for Broadway and off-Broadway shows. You can get to see a play and support listener-sponsored BAI at the same time. I'm looking forward to you stopping by. I can hear you listening already.
Oh, baby, let's have a party.
Let's have a party.
Let's all begin.
Funny, this radio hasn't been working very well the past 2 days.
Peter, where do you live?
I'm glad you asked me.
It's a secret place. Please tell me.
All right, I tell you.
I wonder whatever became of him.
Now, will you tell me what happened on Saturday?
All Mixed Up with Peter Beauchamp.
When?
Saturday afternoon here on WBAI.
That should be time for our favorite program.
Yes, just about time.
What would you do if I went off the air?
We kill ourselves!
New York City never slows down. It can be tough to keep up with everything. That's where WBAI City Watch comes in, Sunday mornings at 8 o'clock. I'm your host, Jeff Simmons.
And I'm Carlos Benchaca. And each week on City Watch, we try to make sense of it all, bringing on our policymakers, advocates, experts, and authors to understand the stories behind the headline. So grab your café con leche, turn your dial to 99.5 FM WBAI, or stream us on WBAI.org. Levántate. Wake up with us on Sunday mornings with me and Jeff Simmons, and get your news on.
Grenada, that tiny little island, with Cuba at the west end of the Caribbean, Grenada at the east end, that tiny little island is building now, or having built for it, on its soil and shores.
Sunday at noon on the WBAI Playhouse, tune in for Halcyon Days by Stephen Dietz, a dark satire about the 1983 U.S. invasion of Grenada.
We're here. You're sure we're here? This is not a wasted question.
They used a tourist map.
I'm sure, sir. I've lived here in Grenada for...